Dr. Thompson, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Chad. Thanks for the invitation.
There's one thing that we didn't mention in the lead to this interview that probably should be noted is that you are an African American.
I surely am, yes.
Now, race shouldn't matter to academic or professional achievement, but it can. It can matter. And did it matter to you growing up?
Oh, sure it did. I mean, race isn't a cause, but surely a correlation. I mean, when I was growing up, I'm from Appalachia, and family, obviously, we were poor. So class matters, too, socioeconomic class, but race mattered. I went to an all-African-American school for several years before being integrated into the public schools. And when I was integrated, obviously, I dealt with particular levels of racism from peers and teachers and others within that environment. And so race is still it still matters even today. I mean, you can look at the achievement gaps and see that.
Well, tell me about some of those experiences you had during integration and how they matter to you as a young person.
We didn't have the equal facilities by no means. We had outhouses. We cooked our food on a stove when we ate lunch. But we had what I felt was a really good education from those folks who taught us, and they mentored us. And when I was integrated into the larger public school system, back then they called the white schools, I dealt with racism at a fairly strong level. Kids would run me home after school. I was called, you know, very negative and racial names. But what it taught me was that if I really truly valued education, I would figure out how to use those items, as many people call obstacles, to actually help me to understand the opportunities that I could have by escaping that level of racism.
Do you think the education that you received in the white school was better, or was it different because you had other social issues facing you now that you were integrated into another school?
Surely not better, but different. In the all African-American school, we had fewer kids, even though we had multiple grades in one room. I think it was a push in saying that if you're ever going to get out of whatever you classify yourself as being in, then you need to get a strong education. So that value of education seemed to have been pushed more in the all African-American school. In the white schools, I had great teachers, I have to tell you. Miss Ruby, I still think of her and still see her often when I go back to my hometown. There was a level of recognizing that I had particular talents, that they wanted to make sure that I was able to live it out, even when I was dealing with a lot of the social influences, if you will, such as peer behavior and so on within that setting. So it was different, not better. But I do believe this. I believe that when I was integrated into the schools, I clearly had a leg up.
We did a listening project similar to a public radio program called StoryCorps, and we interviewed a gentleman named Ronnie Yates in Ballard County, who was the first person to integrate into a school there. And he had a level of disdain toward the education system because of the impact it had on the kids who were the front line for receiving this racism, where they were in their segregated schools. They didn't face that level of racism on a daily basis.
I don't know if I thought of it in that manner. What I did think of, though, that I didn't want to deal with the issue of having to get on the bus first so people would not, push me around or throw rocks or whatever. I felt scared is probably a better way. I don't know if I challenged to the point of understanding whether or not the integration was the process that helped me to feel scared. What I do know, though, and I'll give you this example. One day I went home and I remember going to my father and saying, I can't handle this anymore. You know, I'm tired of being picked on and bullied, and I want to quit school. And my father, who was a pacifist by all stretch of the imagination, looked at me and said, boy, there's two things worth fighting for, and that's your education and your family. I want you to go back and figure out how to fight for your education. Do not let people take it away from you. So to some degree, I think it taught me a resilience as I think about it. But if I didn't have that input, I guess, from my family members, and my father, in this case, and my mother, then I think I could have ended up looking at integration as a way to feel unfair that I feel a little more safe when I was in the all-black institution. Now I'm feeling unsafe in this institution. I mean, you can imagine all the kids now going to school and worried about their safety. To some degree, that's what happened to me when we were first integrated in those schools.
Well, let's move the conversation now to the achievement gap and essentially the issue that socioeconomic conditions and whether or not you're a minority can impact your ability to be college and career ready. Were the barriers that you faced any more or less challenging compared to those kids growing up now?
I don't know if I can do it in that kind of interval level measurement. This is what I will tell you, that race and class matters, not necessarily whether or not a kid will have talent or smarts. It matters in how we use our resources to help those kids to express those talents and smarts. And when I was growing up, I think I had family members, although without education, push the value of education. I mean, pushed it hard. I think now it's tough in many ways that we've become strongly dependent on the school system to help those kids to feel that value. So, and what has happened is that the more disenfranchised a person's background is based on socioeconomic status or race in some cases, then the more the school will have to perform in making sure that they get all those items to those children that will help them to be able to maneuver, in many cases, a foreign environment. That's an odd way of thinking about it, but many of these kids are experiencing an immigrant experience when they come to campus, even though they're very much part of America, just simply because they don't feel like schools were necessarily designed for them. So when I was growing up, I had this feeling that I could accomplish, that I may have had to fight hard to accomplish. I think what has happened now somewhat, that kids may not have that as much as I did. Now, what I do believe is that these kids have a better opportunity for education excellence, far more than me. So somehow we've got to help those kids to have skin in the game, but we also have to be sure that our teachers know how to reach out and help these kids to feel as if they're a part of the environment that was designed for them.
How has funding for at-risk programs impacted the achievement gap in Kentucky?
Well, I think funding for education has impacted that. I think what happens is that we know that high input, high rigor, and high expectations close gaps, but it also raises the achievement level for everyone. And when you don't have enough funding to make sure that you have the kind of wherewithal, the counselors, the excellence in teachers, when we don't help our teacher education programs prepare these teachers to go in a multicultural environment, then I think it will have an impact. And that's exactly how funding has happened, because you will have to have teachers that understand how to have high expectations from all students, no matter what color or class they're coming from, and how, though, to be able to reach out to them, to give them the individual inputs that they need in order to fill that out. And then thirdly, I think we have to make sure that we don't diminish the rigor for any of our students. And once you raise the bar and know people that you believe that they can reach that bar, then they will. So educational lack of funding has hurt us from building that kind of infrastructure for our teachers.
Have we diminished rigor?
I think we haven't diminished rigor. I think we've almost segregated rigor. I think we feel like we can offer rigor to those that we've identified as able to handle rigor. And those that we've identified as can't handling rigor, we don't have that. And I think that's been segregated in various forms, socioeconomic class for sure. I mean, you can see the evidence. But I think also of students of color. We see this in many cases with African American men as an example. I mean, the expectations have to be there. So you can have rigorous, work. But if you don't have rigorous expectations and you don't have rigorous input to help those kids reach that, rigor by itself, just in how hard the class is, as an example, doesn't say much. But knowing that every kid can actually do that work says a whole lot.
Is that perpetuating a challenge in closing the achievement gap? If we continue to segregate rigor and you continue to feed that system, does it not bode well for the future of closing?
It doesn't, but I think our teachers are getting better all the time. Now, I don't want to blame teachers here either, because I think it's a cycle. We have to do better in our teacher prep programs. We have to give our teachers a lot more resources, and we have to give them the opportunity within the classroom. My daughter's a teacher, to be able to live that out, because I know she tries really hard to make sure she reaches out to all students, and that's hard. I mean, there's a lot of inputs. There's a lot of expectations we have of teachers, a lot of you better perform or else kind of philosophy. So this is what I believe. I believe that we will have to understand that part of the rigorous process, let's say, is to give homework and make sure that the homework's done. Many of our kids who are low income or of color may not have family members at home to help them with that. They could be working two jobs in many cases that they are, or a variety of items. So if we know that they can't live out that expectation of homework, let's say, and other kids can, that's one of the ways that you're not getting the kind of inputs that you need. But so to answer your question more specifically, I think, yes, achievement gaps could grow, and they are growing a little bit, and that's very problematic to me. They can grow until we recognize all the inputs that we need to have to help those kids to do it. And a part of it is the home input, true enough. But if that's not able to be there, then how can we replace that with certain after-school programs and so on? So that kind of funding needs to be in place, too.
Well, Dr. Aaron Thompson, thanks so much for taking time to speak with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Chad, for the invitation.